The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get into things, I am closing in on releasing my next solo album, Suck My Dick, which drops on April 6th. Today, I just actually dropped the promo video for my upcoming music video to the single The Butcher Knife Two-Step. You can check that out on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/KatieTrop, or on my official website, katietrop.net. Check that out. I would appreciate it. Let's get right into the bracket. So how's your bracket looking? Mine's got an additional period stain on it. On Friday's show, I let you know that Kentucky just completely annihilated my South Side bracket. And now Baylor has completely annihilated the West Side of my bracket. So only two teams in my Final Four remain at this current point in time. My Final Four, of course, was going to be Iowa State versus Baylor, and Baylor just lost, so they are out of it. And then the other side of my Final Four is going to be Purdue versus Kentucky, and Kentucky's out of it. But luckily for me, my championship was going to be Iowa State versus Purdue, with Purdue as the champions, and so far that's intact, but half of my Final Four is out of the tournament. So let's get right into what happened this weekend. All of the number one seeds moved on. UConn just trucked right on through the east side of the bracket. They really didn't have any issues getting through to the Sweet 16. And then on the west side, North Carolina also just trucked right on through. So they also had no issues making it to the round of 16. And then Purdue on the Midwest side of the bracket, they also had no issues. As a matter of fact, they scored 106 points over the weekend in their round of 32 matchup against Utah State. So that's how dominating they were. Houston was the only one, the only number one seed on the South Side bracket. They were the only one to be put to the test in the round of 32. They took it to overtime against Texas A&M last night, in which was pretty much probably the best matchup we've seen so far. So far, the first weekend of the tournament was what you would expect for the most part. Like I said, all the number one seeds moved on. The majority of the favorite teams won. We didn't really have that many. We did have some close games, but we didn't really have that many crazy games that you tend to have. But Houston versus Texas A&M definitely was a good standout game, went into overtime, and Houston was able to hang on. I mean, Houston was kicking A&M's ass for the first half, and then boom, A&M stepped it up, and they took it to Houston, but Houston got the win. So Houston is the other number one seed that has moved on to the round of 16. So our Sweet 16 matchups, beginning on Thursday, we have on the east side bracket, we have UConn versus San Diego State. I, of course, actually had that matchup in my initial bracket, and I have UConn moving on in that matchup. Then the other Sweet 16 matchup in the east bracket is Illinois versus Iowa State. I, of course, had Iowa State in that matchup. I actually had Morehead State playing them just because I wanted to say Morehead. But Illinois actually ended up moving on, so it's going to be Illinois versus Iowa State. And, of course, I'm sticking with Iowa State in that matchup. Then the Sweet 16 matchups in the West bracket, North Carolina versus Alabama. I actually had North Carolina in this matchup playing St. Mary's, and I had them losing to St. Mary's. Alabama actually has played really well in this tournament. They kicked ass in the round of 64, but played a pretty close matchup actually last night against Grand Canyon University. They did start to pull away in the second half, but it was really one of the craziest matchups where it was just back and forth, back and forth. So Alabama has actually played pretty solid. But to me, North Carolina, they're just looking really solid, and I'm gonna take North Carolina in that matchup. And then we have Clemson versus Arizona on the west side of the bracket in the round of 16. I did not have either of these teams going into it. So I am going to go ahead and take Arizona. I just think they're the better of the two teams. But Clemson has played very, very well so far in this tournament. I mean, they played Baylor handedly. Baylor did not have a shot yesterday. It was all Clemson the entire game. Baylor tried to make a run towards the end. It just never came to fruition, and Clemson moved on. But I'm going to go ahead and take Arizona in that matchup. Then on the south side, yeah, Sweet 16 side, we've got Houston versus Duke. I actually had it as Houston versus Wisconsin in this matchup, but Duke is going to go ahead and go up against Houston, and that's actually probably going to be a really, really good matchup. Duke's been playing really well this entire season, and they trucked right on through their matchups in the first two rounds here, so it's going to be interesting to see who wins this one. I'm going to take Houston just because I think Houston's just the overall better team, but I would not be shocked to see Duke win it. But I think that's going to be probably the best matchup in the Sweet 16. Then also in the South side, we have NC State versus Marquette. I actually had Marquette versus Kentucky in this matchup. I'm going to go ahead and pick Marquette to move on versus NC State. NC State has played some pretty close matchups here. But I'm going to go ahead and take Marquette. And then in the Midwest, the Sweet 16, we've got Purdue versus Gonzaga that I actually had. That's what I had in my initial bracket, and I had Purdue moving on. So I'm going to go ahead and stick with that. Even though Gonzaga, man, they kicked Kansas's ass. I mean, it was not even close. It was, whoa. And this Gonzaga team is not the typical Gonzaga team we're used to. I mean, they're a number 5 seed, which is pretty low for them. But, man, they just stomped Kansas into oblivion. So, Purdue versus Gonzaga. Hopefully, Purdue does not overlook Gonzaga because Gonzaga is an excellent tournament team. And then also in the Midwest, we have Creighton versus Tennessee, which is also an original matchup on my initial bracket. And I had Creighton moving on in that one, and so I'm going to go ahead and stick with Creighton. They're just a very surprising team. They've actually played really well all season long, beginning in the regular season. Now in the tournament, they've also just trucked on through teams. And while Tennessee is a very, very good team, they've had their slip up. So I'm kind of looking at Creighton, and I feel like Creighton's going to get the better of Tennessee in that matchup. So we'll see what happens beginning on Thursday with the Sweet 16. And yeah, we'll see how all of our brackets are going into that matchup. All right, so let's move on to some more basketball, but this time NBA basketball. In my top 10 NBA power rankings, we are getting closer and closer to the playoffs. So not a lot of differences in the power rankings this week, just because I feel like the top two teams, the East and West, are pretty much Boston and Denver and everybody else. And so let's get right into the top 10 NBA power rankings, beginning with the number one team. They've been here all season long, the Boston Celtics. Overall record of 57-14. They are currently on a 9-game winning streak, longest streak right now in the league. They also won their division. Not only did they clinch a playoff spot, but they have officially won their division, and they are just sitting back waiting to see who they are going to play in the playoffs because they've absolutely dominated the Eastern Conference. Nobody even comes close in the Eastern Conference to the Celtics. You don't know come playoff time, though. You just don't know what's going to happen, but this team, they're playing great right now, and they have separated themselves far and away from everybody else in the East. Then at number 2 on my top 10 NBA power rankings, the Denver Nuggets, overall record of 50-21. They are currently on a 3-game winning streak, and they are 8-2 in their last 10 games, and they are really starting to pull away from everybody else in the Western Conference, not just in their division, but every team in the Western Conference. Denver is just getting better and better with each and every game. Jokic is getting better, which is crazy to say. Then you just have all of the role players are stepping it up. You've got Michael Porter Jr., who's been scoring a lot of points lately. You've got Gordon, who's been stepping it up. I mean, this team is just back at it, and I just keep saying it. I would not be surprised to see the Denver Nuggets not only back in the championship, but winning it for a second year in a row, just because they are getting stronger at the right time and really, really separating themselves from the rest of the Western Conference. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA power rankings, of the Oklahoma City Thunder, overall record of 49-21. They are 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they did get smashed by the Milwaukee Bucks, so that was not a good showing by them. But just overall, Oklahoma City's been doing their thing. They have not fallen off. They've been playing well all season long. It's really just going to be what happens come postseason. Are they going to completely fold up because they are a young team? Or are they going to fuck up somebody's season and just knock some people out of the playoffs? We'll see what happens. But definitely in the regular season, they've maintained their dominance. They have not fallen off once, and they continue to look like a really solid team. Then at number four on my top 10 NBA power rankings, I have the Minnesota Timberwolves. Overall record of 49-22. They are 7-3 in their last 10 games, and they are playing well without Karl Anthony Towns. You thought it could possibly, that injury could, you know, hinder them just a bit. Well, they really haven't fallen off at all. As a matter of fact, they seem to be getting stronger as well. I mean, overall as a team, they're getting better defensively, which is where you really need to play well. If you want to be a championship level team, come playoff time, you better have some fucking defense. And this Minnesota Timberwolves team, their defense is actually getting better and stronger as the season wears on, especially this past week. They really took it. I mean, they got beat by the Nuggets, but it was a close matchup still all the way through. They're just a very well-balanced team, and it's going to be interesting to see what this team does come playoff time. Then at number five on my top 10 NBA power rankings of the New Orleans Pelicans, overall record of 44-27. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games, and Zion just went off last night. He had 36 points against the worst team in the league, obviously, the Detroit Pistons, but still. Brandon Ingram was injured earlier in the week. It doesn't look like it's going to be a serious injury, but still, Ingram's injured, and that's a big deal. But Zion is healthy, and Zion is just trucking through people. He's getting win after win. He did have a down game. He only scored 4 points earlier in the week, but I mean, whatever. You're going to have a down game every once in a while. He stepped it up big yesterday, though, and this New Orleans Pelicans team, they are looking solid. Other than this Brandon Ingram injury, they are looking solid, and McCollum has stepped up in Ingram's absence, and really just the rest of the Pelicans squad. They play overall, you know, I just mentioned that the Timberwolves are a well-balanced team. Well, the Pelicans are also a very well-balanced team as well. Then at number six on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Milwaukee Bucks. Overall record of 46-25. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. Giannis is back from his injury, so that's definitely something they needed to make this playoff run, even though it looks like they're probably going to end up with the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. But they are still very Jekyll and Hyde. They are so up and down. They will blow you out one game and then just get smashed in the next game. I don't know what the hell I'm going to get from this team, especially come playoff time, because what if they're out? What if they're a one-and-done team? I would not be shocked to see the Milwaukee Bucks eliminated in the first round by a really mediocre team, but that's just because the Bucks are not a consistent team at all, and it just has shown all season. And that's when you get to April, when you get to March, April, and then once we hit the playoffs, you are what you are. And the Bucks, exceptionally inconsistent, and that is not what you want when you're trying to make a playoff run. But I will say, Dame Lillard has been on fire. He took over. Once Giannis was injured, those games Giannis was out, Dame really stepped it up, and the guy went off. And you really got to... That's why I feel like they traded for him, not only because he is an exceptional player, but when Giannis is out, you want another guy who's going to be able to step it up big. And so far, Dame has been that dude. Then at number seven on my top 10 NBA power rankings is the Dallas Mavericks. Overall record of 41-29. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games, and Luka is just unstoppable at this point, averaging 34 points per game, 9 rebounds per game, 10 assists per game, 2 steals per game. He's just doing it all for this Dallas Mavericks team. Kyrie also playing very well as of late. And what I'm seeing from this Mavericks team, but it's just, they don't have enough firepower, in my opinion, to go up against a team like the Nuggets, especially the Nuggets with all their championship pedigree at this point. But if the Mavericks, in a 7-game series against a team like the Timberwolves or the Pelicans, I think they will struggle. Just because in the paint, they will get owned. And in a 7-game series, you can't do that. Luka's great. And he's just getting hotter and hotter as the season goes on and making such a strong case for MVP as well. It's really difficult to deny what he's doing, but he's doing it all. He is doing it all. And in the playoffs, that's not gonna be helpful. But right now, Mavericks are looking pretty solid and looking to make a nice little playoff run here. Then at number 8 on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Phoenix Suns. Overall record of 42-29. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. They actually won 3 out of 4 of their games this past week. So they are on fire. They are getting hot at the right time of the season. Bradley Beal's playing well. He looks to be finally healthy right now. Kevin Durant's averaging 28 points per game. Devin Booker's averaging 27 points per game. So offensively, they have zero issues. It really is just the defensive side of the ball here. But like I said, this is the time of year when you want to get hot. They are hot, and the Clippers are falling apart. As a matter of fact, the Clippers are not in the top 10 this week because they are getting beat up. They are losing, they are not looking good, and they are losing grip on the division with the last 3 weeks of the season. Here we are. I would not be shocked to see either Phoenix or the Sacramento Kings take over the division and walk away with that over the Clippers, who are falling apart right now. Then at number 9 on my top 10 NBA power rankings, the Sacramento Kings. Overall record of 41-29, 7-3 in their last 10 games. They have also won 3 out of 4 of their last games, 3 out of 4 of their games last week. And Domantas Sabonis, he set a record, or he tied a record this week. He had his 53rd straight game with a double-double. 53rd straight game. That is insane. It's also insane because I really haven't heard anybody talk about it. I actually just stumbled on it when I was just doing research for the show and just seeing what's going on with the Kings. And then I saw that and I was like, whoa, I didn't even hear that on NBA TV. I watched their highlight show daily and I didn't hear any of them discussing it, really go in depth on it. And that's pretty crazy just because that just goes to show the level of consistency with Sabonis. And he's why they're playing so well right now. But like I said, with the Kings and the Suns, they're getting hot at the right time of the year. Clippers are starting to fall off the face of the earth, and would not be shocked to see either one of those teams win the division at the end of the season. And then rounding out the top 10 NBA power rankings this week, I have the New York Knicks. Overall record of 42-28. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. They've been very, very streaky, but they are hot right now. And this is, like I keep saying, this is the time of year when you want to be hot. Jalen Brunson's playing well. OG Anunoby is playing well. Now that he's healthy, he's back in it and really stepping it up for the Knicks. Defensively, I really like what I see from this team, but offensively, they tend to have their downward spirals. They just are a weird team. That's why you haven't heard me discuss them in the last couple of weeks, because they've been down. But now they're on the upside of things. The playoffs are rolling around here. Are they going to be able to compete? Are they going to get Julius Randle back? Who the hell knows what's going to go on with this team? But the Eastern Conference is so terrible. Don't be shocked if you see the Knicks end up in the Eastern Conference Finals, because that's how terrible the Eastern Conference is at this rate. But the Knicks are playing well right now. We'll see. They are very streaky, so give them 3 weeks, and then they'll probably be shitty when the playoffs begin, and then they'll be one and done. So who knows what we're going to get with them. But that is the top 10 NBA power rankings for this week. We do have a little bit of NFL news, and it is NFL news that zero of us are excited about. I don't even know why the owners decided to vote on this. It's been something they've been discussing all season long. I've expected it to happen, but I just don't understand why it's happening. And today it was officially announced because the owners are having one of their owners' meetings this week. And so with that means new rule changes are voted upon, new things are discussed in the league. And one of the things that was unanimously voted on today, with no and nobody saying nay to this, they banned the hip drop tackle. If you don't know what that is, it's really kind of difficult to explain if you're not watching it. But basically, it's a tackle. We are like a step away now from fucking playing flag football. That's how disappointing this news is to all the fans, to all the players. I mean, players have made it known. Current and ex-players have made it known all season long, and especially today, how stupid this is. Because what the fuck do you expect a defender to do now? At this point in time, basically every tackle is going to be up for debate on whether you're getting a 15-yard penalty. By the way, y'all, this ain't no little bitch-ass penalty 5 yards bullshit. This is going to be one of the big penalties, and it's ridiculous and stupid. The reason why it's become an issue is because a few guys have been getting injured on it, but that's because we play tackle football. Sometimes guys are going to get injured. And unfortunately, this is the new thing. And it's pathetic. It's despicable. It sucks. Hopefully it doesn't last. Hopefully it's one of those rules where it's experimental for the season, and then there's just so much outcry, or it's just so terrible for the game that they get rid of it next year. But who knows? That's no guarantee. But none of us are happy about it. Not the fans, not the players, nobody. I don't know who the fuck is happy about this. I don't know why the owners are deciding to do this. It's stupid. But like I said, if you just Google and look up hip drop tackle, you will see it's basically the defender is behind the offensive player, whoever has the ball, and basically he's tackling him starting kind of at the hip. And what'll happen is sometimes your body weight will land on the offensive player's leg, and legs have been broken or injuries have happened in that manner, but like I said, we're playing tackle football where grown-ass men are running into each other. You're going to get hurt at some point, and they're eliminating that from the game this upcoming season. So expect fucking flag football here right around the goddamn corner. I mean, it's annoying enough. I already cringed when they turned the Pro Bowl into flag football because I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. I don't want to be that person, you know, sitting on the porch, don't change my football, but it's tackle fucking football, people. I've had problems with this for a long ass time, starting with this whole concussion shit. I just look at it and I go, this is tackle football. You're going to get hurt. And you signed up for this. In my opinion, if at this rate you don't know what you're signing up for, you're a fucking idiot. Sorry, plain and simple, you're a fucking idiot. And you get what you get. But we're playing tackle football here, y'all. And when they turned the Pro Bowl into flag football, I looked at that and was like, oh, God. I feel like this is just a slippery slope. I feel like we're just going to insert that slowly into pro football. I mean, it started with kids, which I'm not against flag football, but flag football should be its own thing. It should be for stupid little kids and for all us retards who don't really play football. It should not be a professional fucking thing. Pro football is tackle fucking football. I don't want to see Micah Parsons trying to pull a flag from some motherfucker. I want to see Micah Parsons drive the goddamn quarterback into the fucking ground is what I want to fucking see. That's why I'm enjoying watching all these old Super Bowls, because I at least get to see real football. But now, this whole removing of the hip drop tackle thing, it really does kind of get us closer to fucking flag football and pro football. I don't think it's going to go that far. But like I said, I cringed when the Pro Bowl turned that way. But I was like, it's just a Pro Bowl, Katie. Don't worry about it. Now we've got the Olympics, which I think the Olympics are fucking stupid to begin with anyways. Don't even get me on an I hate Olympics rant. But the Olympics are now going to have flag football. Their next whatever. I don't know whatever round of bullshit they have going on there. Then, so that was another kind of cringe factor for me. But I was like, whatever. It's just a gay-ass Olympics. Who the fuck cares? But now that we're banning the hip drop tackle, I kind of look at that and go, so what? Then what? We're gonna get some bubble wrap and wrap the football players up in bubble wrap, and then we're gonna play flag football. Is that fucking next? I mean, come on. And I know I'm not the only one with this opinion. That's why I'm like, I don't want to be the old person on my porch saying don't change my football. But guess what? I ain't the only one on my porch this morning. I'm actually pretty much all of us are on the porch this morning, except for the goddamn fucking NFL owners. And you'd think they wouldn't give two shits and a fuck about players' health, because we're fully aware they give two shits and a fuck about players' health. They can pretend they do, but they do not. So I don't know why they're banning this. Like I said, this is, it gets us closer. It gets me a little bit more cringy. I don't think we'll get there, because I really, me personally, if we go to flag football, I ain't watching that shit anymore. So if that's, I kind of feel like that's what would change things, ratings and all that, money talks, of course, with owners. But this makes me cringe, y'all. This makes me cringe, but it's making everybody cringe. None of us are happy about it. This is stupid. I can't believe this is what it's come to, but going to be real interesting to see how this season turns out. It's going to be a high-scoring affair for offenses, that's sure. Maybe we'll get to our first 100-point game in the NFL this season. Or I don't think we've had a 100-point game ever in the history. I could be wrong, but we could have that potentially this year, since you can't really tackle at all. It's going to be very interesting to see how this rule is implemented. Oh, and also, all y'all who complain about officials so much, get ready to complain about the officials some more, because now you're definitely going to see some fucking loosey-goosey flags on shit, because now they're going to be like, what the fuck's a tackle? So, ugh, God, I don't like it. Tends to be a slippery slope, y'all, but let's just hope that this is just one of those rules, like the pass interference reviewable rule from a few years ago, where it just goes away, where it lasts a year and goes away. Let's just hope that's the case here, but who the fuck knows? But regardless, none of us are happy about it. I don't know why it's here, but we're going to find out what goes on this year with the stupid hip drop ban. Ugh, God. All right, now let's move on to more exciting things, and that would be my predictions on the 2024 MLB season. Let's get to the American League and National League West predictions. So let's start off with the AL West, and this is definitely a stacked division. I think there's definitely three teams in here who could definitely make the playoffs, who could actually win this division. It was actually kind of difficult for me to decide who I think is going to win this division. But I went with all reliable, and that is the Houston Astros. I think they boosted their only weakness last year. The biggest weakness for the Astros was their relief pitching. And what did they do? They went and added the best closer in the game, Josh Hader. So I feel like they are definitely going to be a much improved team, which says a lot, because this team has been one of the best teams in the league for a while now. They still have Alvarez. They still have Altuve. They still have Kyle Tucker. They still have Valdez. They still have Javier. There's no weakness in this Houston Astros team. So I have them winning the West, even though I feel like they're going to have some competition throughout the season. Then at number two, finishing in second place, I have in the AL West, the Texas Rangers, the defending champion Texas Rangers. I knew who thought we would be saying that. The defending champion Texas Rangers, y'all. So with that being said, that means everybody's going to be headhunting for the Rangers, because they are the defending champs. So you're going to get everybody's best game. Nobody's going to be overlooking you. Nobody's going to be feeling sorry for you. You're definitely going to be getting everybody's best each and every game. So with that being said, usually there is a slight fallback. The Rangers do, beyond Yavaldé, they have a lot of questions at the starting pitching position. But offensively, they should have no issues. They still have Adolis Garcia. They still have Sager. They still have a very solid core here. It's really just their pitching are where I think their problems are going to lie. And so, you know, just the pitching, and then also them being the defending champs, they're going to be, they got to have their heads on a swivel. That's for sure. So I've got the Rangers finishing in second place in the American League West. Then in third place, I have the Seattle Mariners finishing in third place in the American League West. This is another team, though. I feel like they're going to be strong. I feel like they're going to make a run. I feel like this American League West is going to be shifting for first place regularly. I feel like it's going to be a battle probably to the last game of the season. And I feel like Seattle's going to be a team right in it. They've got Luis Castillo, who really has been lights out for them as a starting pitcher. Then you got Julio Rodriguez, who just continues to get better and better every year he's been in the league. So we'll see what he's got this year. My only problem with the Mariners is they have zero depth at the pitching position. I mean, Luis Castillo and then everybody else is pretty much their pitching. So that could be an issue, but I don't think they're going to have an issue scoring runs, and they're actually a very good defensive team as well. So that's why I feel like they're going to compete here with the Astros and the Rangers. But like I said, with the Astros, they've been consistently good for too long, and then they add in Josh Hader, which was their only weakness last year. I just don't see anybody else touching the Astros in this division. But I do think Seattle's going to make things interesting. Then finishing in fourth place, I have the Los Angeles Angels. They're just a terrible team. They have nobody beyond Mike Trout. They lost Shohei Ohtani in the offseason. They weren't a good team with Shohei Ohtani. Trout is just getting older. He's becoming that guy who's now getting injured at some point in the season. So I don't even know what to really expect from the Angels. They're only above the A's in this division because the A's are that much worse. But the Angels, you really can make a case for them being one of the worst teams in the league this year. And then finishing in last place in the American League West, I have the Oakland A's because they're just an overall terrible team. I couldn't name a player on their team off the top of my head right now. Even when I was overlooking their roster, when I was making notes for this, I was like, who the fuck are you? What do you do? And, you know, they're just, they haven't been good for quite some time. I don't think the A's want to be good. So I feel like they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year. And good luck, Vegas. That's your baseball team. And so that's the American League West. Now moving on to the National League West and how I feel like that's going to turn out. Of course, I am a Giants fan, and I don't have my Giants winning the National League West this year. Unfortunately, it pains me to say this. I have the Dodgers. Sorry, I just vomited all over myself. I have the Dodgers winning the National League West. You know, they signed Shohei Ohtani, the biggest free agent in the offseason, and then they signed another big free agent. Actually, they just spent their entire offseason signing nothing but spectacular players. Another free agent, though, they signed in the offseason is a starting pitcher, Tyler Glasnow, just to add into this already deep roster with Betts and Freddie Freeman. So they are a really solid team. I will say, though, the only question with the Dodgers this season is their pitching. Their starting pitching and their bullpen, because there really isn't an ace other than Glasnow. But Glasnow has been kind of questionable at times as well. I do think he's going to have a great year with the Dodgers, no doubt. But beyond Glasnow, there really isn't a guy you look at him and go, oh, he's solid. He's definitely 10 wins. Oh, yeah, he's definitely going to go out there and do it for the Dodgers. So I feel like the only weakness the Dodgers are going to have this season is going to be pitching. But then I say that, and they're probably going to dominate everybody like they always fucking do. But they're definitely going to have no issue scoring runs this season with Ohtani, Betts, and Freddie Freeman, some of the greatest, most prolific scorers in the league. I mean, honestly, they're pretty much only missing Aaron Judge and Juan Soto to fucking complete the goddamn team at this rate. Then finishing in second place in the National League West, I do have the Arizona Diamondbacks. I didn't know how I felt about the Diamondbacks coming into the season because while I do think they're they are coming off of a season where they did go to the World Series. They did lose, but they went, and I mean they made a ferocious playoff run, and they actually had a solid regular season. So they're coming off of a great year for them. They have a really solid young core, especially with Corbin Carroll coming off of a Rookie of the Year season. I expect him to just take off. I mean, he looks like a fantastic five-tool player. And then you have Zach Gallen, fantastic pitcher as well. And like I said, they just have a nice young core, and I expect them to keep building on it. But usually when you lose the World Series, you tend to take a step back. And so I wouldn't be shocked if they kind of fall back a bit this season, but they have too good of a roster. They also added Eugenio Suarez. He's a good, solid hitter. Also gives them some defense at the third baseman side. So I like the moves they made in the offseason. It's just they're the Diamondbacks, so you just never know what the hell to expect from this team. Just like last year. I thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in the league last year, and they ended up going to the World Series. That's how surprising they were last year. But they could, fall back this season. But they do have a solid roster, especially a young core there, and I don't think Carroll's falling back at all this year. I expect him to actually be better. Which says a lot. And then same with Gallen, one of the most solid starting pitchers in the league. So I've got Arizona finishing in second place. Then finishing in third place in the NL West, I have my San Francisco Giants. I do like a couple of the additions they made. I just don't think they made enough additions. I'm pissed off they did not sign Ohtani. They need a player like Ohtani to actually be a legitimate contender. Like I said, I like the few additions they made. They did just sign Blake Snell, Snell, the starting pitcher, and then they also signed Jorge Soler to bolster the offense just a bit. They also signed Matt Chapman, who helps offensively and defensively. But like I said, they just don't have a real star player. We do have Logan Webb. Love Logan Webb as a starting pitcher, but I just don't know if he can lead this team. There's just so many questions with this team. We have a new manager at hand, so we just have a lot of questions coming into the season. I like the moves, but I don't think the moves were big enough to make them a legit contender, especially when you have the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks in the division. So I don't think that the Giants are going to be a very good team this year. I think they could be a streaky team where they're good at times and then bad at times. But I just don't expect a lot for them. I don't expect them to be a playoff team, that's for sure. Then finishing in fourth place in the National League West, I have the San Diego Padres. They, of course, completely revamped this team. They traded away Juan Soto. And apparently my dog has opinions on them trading away Juan Soto. But that's what the Padres do. They trade away their best players, but he wasn't happy there. He also wasn't really excelling there, so you might as well trade him away to the Yankees and see what you could do with that. But, I mean, overall, with the Padres, where's the offense? They don't really have any offense outside of Machado. And then with Tatis, he hasn't really been the same since he got injured and a few years ago. And then, of course, he had the suspension due to steroids. So he really hasn't been the same guy the last couple of seasons. So who knows what we're expecting from him. And then in the starting position, they do have Darvish and Musgrove, who are very solid starters. But beyond them, they don't really have anything else going on. So I'm not expecting much from the San Diego Padres this season. But finishing in last place in the National League West, I have the Colorado Rockies. They're just an overall terrible team. There really isn't much good to say about them. They have a couple of decent young players, but outside of that, I don't expect the Rockies to be doing a lot of winning this season. So that's how I feel like the National League West is going to shape up this season. So enjoy the week of sports, y'all, and I will talk to you fools on Friday.